From the radio show in Orlando, Florida, it's the Top of the Tower podcast from Feibusch Media. I'm your host, Scott Feibusch. This podcast is brought to you this week by your friends at Wheatstone, your source for anything and everything studio-related. Mixers, consoles, IP networking, mic processing, even furniture. Plus, Wheatstone makes audio processing and the popular Jockbox, the Vox Pro digital audio editor. The Wheat team is right here in Orlando at booth 44, so stop in and say hi if you are listening while you're here at the radio show in Orlando. If you are not here at the radio show in Orlando, here is some of what you're missing here. A lot of talk about the whole deal with SiriusXM and Pandora. I've been having some interesting conversations walking around the show floor with a lot of folks in radio trying to figure out exactly what's in it, particularly for Sirius, to spend all this money on the Pandora platform. We're talking about a several billion dollar deal here. And the question is, what does it give that SiriusXM didn't already have? They've already got plenty of channels that are playing music. They already originate a lot more content than Pandora itself does. And it's interesting, I was getting in a conversation last night with a radio researcher, and we were talking about what teenagers in particular are using these days, and the answer increasingly seems to be not necessarily Pandora. I actually ended up asking my own teenager what she uses for music, and her answer pretty much was she's in the Apple Music ecosystem, and she doesn't think many of her friends have Pandora. So it's a very interesting question as to exactly what the point for Sirius is of making this deal, whether it's an opportunity for them to do more custom music services as part of the app, because that's one important thing that a lot of people don't necessarily realize about SiriusXM. It's not so much about actual satellite delivery of their content anymore. As you know, if you drive around in a car and you listen for the content, and I will admit it, I do. I'm a SiriusXM subscriber as well as a terrestrial radio listener. You know that the audio bandwidth on the satellite is very, very limited and extremely fatiguing after a while. As much as I love the Bruce Springsteen channel, I can't drive around for multiple hours listening to it because there's just not enough audio content there. My ears are working too hard to fill in the compression gaps. So, you know, it's much more of a streaming play these days for SiriusXM. They're pushing that app extremely hard, in part because they can deliver somewhat better audio bandwidth over it. And so perhaps it's a natural jump from that then to say, okay, if you like these streaming channels that you're paying SiriusXM for, you can also use the Pandora service. So we'll see perhaps if this becomes an integrated offering. So that's one big story from the show floor. We're going to have a lot more. We're recording a lot of conversations on the floor for the podcast, as well as doing some Facebook Live segments. If you check out my Facebook page, or if you check out the Wheatstone Facebook page, you'll see an interview I did today with Mike Erickson of Wheatstone, talking not only about some of what's happened back home in North Carolina for them, but also about their new processing box, the X4, and we'll listen to some of the other processing that's out there on the show floor as we're walking around as well. So a lot of that going on here in Orlando, too. We are also, of course, enjoying the opportunity to catch up with some of the folks that you don't see outside of a radio show, and especially at a radio show in Orlando. This happens to be the home base of Peter King, who is coming up on 20 years now as an important part of the CBS News radio team. Peter stopped by the convention today to visit the radio luncheon, and we had a chance to sit down with him and have a lengthy conversation about his career, about the future of radio news, and about the way that he goes out and covers stories in 2018. Peter King, thank you for joining me on the Top of the Tower podcast. When in Orlando, as we are for the radio show, we get to hook up with the CBS News Radio Southern Command, as it were. So you're coming up on 20 years now with CBS News Radio.
This is a scary thought. I mean, I started as a stringer back in 1994 when I was working local radio here in Orlando. 1997 and 98, though, I kind of became a full-time freelancer, if you will. And now, in a couple of weeks, in October, they're having a service awards dinner, and they do this every year. I didn't know this. For people who've been with the network for 20, 30, 40 years or longer. And I'm one of the 20-year guys, and it's like, where did all the time go? And I've got no idea.
So we got to get the plug in here that, among other things in October, you and I are both upstate New Yorkers, and you're also going to be back in my neck of the woods for Ithaca College for a big anniversary.
I am so looking forward to this. This is my 40th my 40th college reunion, and my first radio was at WICB FM, 10 booming watts from South Hill, back in 1974. And we're having, obviously, class of 78, but really people from all classes coming in. And we got people who are real luminaries in the business and people that you will know coming in. Bill Deal, who was before my time, but a longtime correspondent for ABC. Al Rosen, who is not an on-air household name, but Al Rosen, for the techno geeks, if you will, was the board op for many years for people like Cousin Brucie and Dan Ingram at WABC New York, later went on to WLS and worked with legends like Landecker out there, and most recently has been at what was then CBS station WBBM. And people from all over the spectrum will be back. I'm excited to go back because it's the first time I've been back since we were promoting the book that I think you're still selling on your website, Ithaca Radio, available right now if you go to phibush.com. I still got that right?
You did, along with a brand new 2019 Tower Site calendar.
Gotta do
which
it.
Is
gotta
just
get
out.
The calendar.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, so let's talk a little bit about
one more thing. 70 years of WICB.
Oh, because it started as Carrier Current.
Right, in downtown Ithaca, and then became FM and Carrier Current when they were, by the time they had moved up the hill. So 70 years.
And it was just recently, there was just a list out of the most influential college stations in the country, and it was on there.
Very proud to see that we were in the top 10, and, you know, with all the college radio that's around, that's pretty impressive.
I'm coming down for that. I'm looking forward to seeing some of that. I've still never been in WICB.
It's really, we were in there 4 years ago. It's a beautiful control room, but guess what? They still have vinyl. They still have records. And you know what? Here's the thing. One thing I loved about being on the air is they get to choose their own music for their own shows. And, you know, I always enjoyed that component. And even later on when I got into the business, when we still had the chance to choose some of our own music, you know, that's all gone now for the most part, but they still do that at ICB, and I'm glad to see it.
So you're doing things remotely that we couldn't have done back when you and I were getting started in this business. If you're listening to a CBS Hourly Newscast or World News Roundup, it's not unlikely that you're going to be sitting in your chair at home in Orlando anchoring it from down here.
When I fill in, that's the MO. And here's the thing. 20 years ago when I first started anchoring hourlies, they would bring me up to New York to fill in up there vacation relief. It was kind of a reward for whatever I was doing out in the field. And when they found out that I could actually anchor newscasts, they said, well, this gives us another option. So I'd go up and I'd fill in doing the overnights for a week or one of the other shifts for a week and had a ball. It was also good to connect with everybody up there. But fast forward a few years later, the technology, and I'm not talking about the connectivity of voice, because ISDN has been around for a long time, and I've had ISDN in the house since 1999. And I would be the anchor of not last resort, but if somebody suddenly filled in or sicked out, I could fill in. They'd run what was then carts from New York. But it worked, and if you were listening, you could not tell that it was not coming from New York. The software we use now enables me to download a virtual cart wall and run my own sound up the line. We have both ISDN and internet codec, so there are two streams. We have a backup, and it gives me more control of the newscast technically, and if I have to do something on the fly, I could do that as opposed to, you know, somebody up there not knowing if I was going to go, you know, off the charts on something or if something technically went wrong or that kind of thing. It's a wonderful system. 99% of the time it works. And when it doesn't, we figure out another way to do it. And it saves a lot of travel expense. And it also gives the network a great option for a fill-in at the last minute. People get sick. People have things happen and they can't fill their shifts, but I also get regularly scheduled shifts and fill-ins too. And you know, it I know I'm rambling here, but the thing I like is the chance to do a little bit of everything, and that really gives me a chance to have some fun sitting in the big chair from time to time.
A chance to do the World News Roundup from your own house? Who wouldn't love that?
I never would have predicted that in a million years, and I still picture myself as a little kid watching my dad shave in the morning, listening to the World News Roundup on WCBS. We lived outside of New York, and never in a million years did I imagine I'd ever be anchoring the broadcast, no less the way I get to do it. It's pretty incredible. And, you know, look, I'm fond of saying I've got the best gig in the business, and that's one of the reasons why.
Any broadcast that's been going for 80 years, I mean, that says everything right there.
Well, think of the people who've anchored that broadcast over the years, Scott. Going back to Robert Trout in the beginning, people like Dallas Townsend, Reed Collins, who recently died, Bill Lynch, who was anchoring the roundup when I started, Chris Glenn, who came after him. I mean, you're following in some pretty amazing footsteps. Steve Kathan, of course, the regular anchor, and I've known Steve for almost 40 years now. Look, I'm just a designated fill-in guy, and I don't fill in, you know, I don't have, I'm not one of the big guys that people are going to remember in another 20 or 30 years, probably. But hey, I got to do the World News Roundup, and how cool is that?
As the designated fill-in guy at WXXI in Rochester, I know exactly where you're coming from. The difference is they haven't figured out how to let me do it from my house.
Well, they just don't want to spend the money. I mean, it's public radio, and, you know, they gotta spend the money on other things. Tote bags. I'm only kidding, you know.
I'm wearing my NPR socks today. You can't see this on the podcast, but they are there. So,
but I've got to tell you one thing, what we did with the Roundup recently. I don't know if you knew this. We took the Roundup on the road during Hurricane Florence a couple of weeks ago and anchored it completely remotely from South Carolina. It has never been done that way before. And our boss, Craig Swagler, threw that out days in advance. Unbeknownst to me, he had already talked to producer Paul Ferry and said, so what do you think if we can get a really good connection with Peter in South Carolina? What do you think? He said, it's doable. And then Craig talked to me about it, and I said, are you out of your mind?
And yet.
Well, the reason I said that is because, you know, if you're in a hurricane zone, connections can be really unstable. And I've seen the evening news go belly up because they tried to do a newscast from Haiti right after the earthquake, even though we had satellite dishes and everything else down there. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what could go wrong as opposed to what could go right? That's what I do, though. I mean, you're out in the field. You have to think of all the contingencies. Craig said, if you can find a hookup with an Ethernet connection and you've got your Comrex access, which, of course, I do, we think it could work. And I found an Internet connection in the hotel with an Ethernet connection. The Hampton Inn people in Somerville, South Carolina, allowed me to commandeer the business center for the entire Friday morning as the hurricane was hitting, and it worked. And if you listen back to it, it was seamless. And it's like when I was done, I kind of felt like we'd pitched both games of a doubleheader and pitched 1-0 shutouts with the bases loaded every inning. But damn it, it worked. How about that?
So how much lead time do you get? I mean, you must get calls that say, get to the airport or get in your car. You've got to be 600 miles away this afternoon, right?
Well, with hurricanes, it's a different ballgame because you know pretty much days in advance where a hurricane is going or could go. I mean, there were times when we'd send 3 or 4 guys along to various points on the coast to cover a hurricane because those were the 3 or 4 points where it could get hit. In this case, we knew days in advance that it was going to be the Carolinas. We just didn't know where. And the idea was to have Jim Krasula, who lives in Greensboro, North Carolina, in North Carolina, in Wilmington, where we had pretty good confidence that it was going to hit. For me, the idea was we don't know if Jim's going to be able to keep his connectivity. We want you in the ballpark, but not in the middle of the storm, because we want you someplace where you'll keep power and keep internet and at least be close enough within striking distance and be able to file. So I kind of felt like, if you remember the old Wild Kingdom, I felt like I was Marlon Perkins back in the studio to a degree, and Jim was Jim Fowler, and we were sending him down the rapids to go over the waterfall. It wasn't quite like that, and there were plenty of stories close enough to where I was that it was definitely worth having me where I was. I mean, the preparation stories, the flooding stories that came after the storm hit. For a little bit, I was in Columbia, South Carolina, where the governor and all the emergency managers were, and I was in the emergency management operations center for a couple days when all the flooding was starting to come down to South Carolina, and I went up to the northeastern part of the state. It was about the equivalent of driving from Rochester to New York City all in one day. But it was worth it from a news coverage standpoint, because there are so many stories out there. The only travel assignments I've had this year have been because of the Parkland High School shooting in South Florida, and that took me everywhere from Parkland up to Tallahassee. We've had some other stories around the state as well, but because I've been anchoring so much, they'd been sending me traveling less. That may change. My assignments are about to change a little bit, and I'll get to be reporting a little bit more and anchoring a little bit less, and I'm really good with that, because reporters only really love you when they're reporting. We did take a summer vacation for 3 weeks, though, where I don't want to say we had a news blackout, but we didn't listen to any radio news or watch any TV news, and that was a pleasure.
I think all of us in the news business right now kind of need that decompression at points. It's coming so fast right now.
But the problem is, so many people in this business don't know how to disconnect. Think about it. We are all married to our phones. And you and I are sitting here, and we are talking at the NAB radio show. And as I was waiting for you outside the exhibit hall, I'm watching to see how many people are looking so important, tapping into their phones. And then I realize, oh, yeah, I'm one of them right now. Sometimes you just have to learn how to put the phone down, turn the TV off, occasionally turn the radio off, but mostly leave the radio on. You have to step back and you have to take a breather and remember that there's other stuff out there. And here's the thing. It took me a while to get to that point, maybe 10 years in the news business, before I realized that, you know what, stuff is always going to happen when you're on vacation or when you've got other issues that take you away from the job. It's okay for stuff to happen while you're away and unable to deal with it, because somebody else is going to deal with it. It'll be somebody else's story. But when you get back, there's always going to be something else for you. And I think that's a really important lesson for anybody who's in this business. And can I tell you, let me tell you this. When I was program director in Syracuse, 2 years at WHEN as PD, out of my 10.5 years there.
Legendary radio station.
It was, and I was there at the tail end of that. And happily, I could say I didn't run it into the ground. But, you know, I look, as a program director, I was always listening, and I was always trying to tweak. And, you know, I was the king of writing memos. And, you know, I thought I was doing all the right things to do the job, keep track of what was going on, be aware of what's on your radio station at all times. But it really was costly in terms of things like personal relationships, in terms of people feeling like they were being micromanaged. And I violated what became a cardinal rule for me later on for other managers, and that is always hire good people and let them do their jobs. I had good people there, but I was always, you know, constantly tweaking, and I must have driven people crazy much more than I realized. Same thing happened when I was a news director down here for my last 6 months at the old 740 Winds AM in Orlando, WWNZ, because, you know, you want everybody to be doing it in your image and your plan, and it's like, okay, you can have a plan, but you got to give people some leeway. And I grew to appreciate that more when I became just a reporter / anchor / correspondent and got the chance to have some independence and really do a lot of stuff on my own. So the moral of the story is I'm glad I got a chance to manage in three places I knew a long time ago that I never, ever wanted to do it again. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
But it takes a certain kind of person to be able to work 900 miles from the bosses and be able to do what you do and have them respect your ability to do what you do for them.
I think you have to have a great deal of trust on both ends. And sometimes on my end, I feel a real disconnect. And that's no secret in our shop because I've talked about it with a lot of people. And, you know, the best thing you can do is just try and be conscious of the distance with your tone of voice, with your tone of emails or messages or whatever. I don't always succeed. And there are days when I could be a real handful. And I've got to say to myself, shut the hell up and quit whining. I mean, look, that'll happen. On the other hand, for the most part, I have worked for people at CBS who have trusted me and haven't ridden my ass every day and said, why haven't you filed 5 stories or 10 stories or 2 stories, or why haven't you filed anything? And the thing is, they know that if I'm not filing anything, I'm not going to file something just to make the needle move. I'm probably working on something else. I mean, here's an example. Yesterday, I think I filed 2 short voice pieces because they were requested, but I was working on 2 stories that we call futures, that one will air next week, one will air this weekend, spending some time doing a little research, gathering audio, setting up phone calls or Skype sessions to do the interviews, that sort of thing. They trust me enough to know that I'm not sitting there watching Law and Order reruns all day, although occasionally I will confess if there's day baseball,
I was going to say, in the month of March, you tend to be a little scarce on the ground sometimes around here.
Well, in March, though, that was by design and taking some vacation time to do some spring training baseball. You know what? If there's day baseball on the tube and cable news is just showing the same number of talking heads, baseball will win out for a little bit, but the sound is turned down, and I'm only going to look up occasionally when, you know, I need a distraction from the computer screen. And if, you know, look, if the world implodes, I'm going to find out pretty quickly and be in with the ball game and what can I do to help and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. I want to talk quickly about technology. You'd mentioned ISDN. And, of course, in a lot of areas now you can't get it anymore, and existing lines are being turned down. Does that go away for you eventually? And then what backs up the IP connection for you?
Well, what backs up the IP connection is going to be probably separate IP connections on separate streams. It's the smart move. And you know what? An IP connection sounds cleaner than an ISDN connection to the trained ear. I think most people would not know it, but you and I would know it. ISDN will disappear at some point, but not quite yet. And, you know, when that happens, somehow we'll be ready for it. We're getting ready to do some work over at our Kennedy Space Center building, and that's going to be one of the issues that we face as we do that. We've had ISDN there all the time. Will we still have it, or is it going to be complete Internet protocol? Stay tuned. Or as they say, only time will tell. We'll have to wait and see. How's that? 3 cliches in 15 seconds.
There we go. I know some writing coaches would be all over you on that.
And I would be all over myself, too. So that was firmly tongue-in-cheek.
Charlie Kay, if he's listening to this right now, is going to have his head explode.
If Charlie is listening, I know I'm going to hear from him quickly.
He's off taking pictures, I think.
Could be.
Space, you brought that up, and I should have mentioned that sooner. Of course, you've had this opportunity over the years to cover a good chunk of the end of the space shuttle program, and now all the private launches that are taking place. Talk to me about what's going on and what your setup is over at the Space Center and how much you're over there now.
Well, I'm not over there that much, but that is about to change as we do a lot of work on our bureau building over there. It's both TV and radio, and we are one of the few, really, we and I think NBC are the only networks that have permanent buildings over there now. And they don't call them permanent buildings because NASA always reserves the right to take it back and tear it down. But our building has been there for almost 30 years, and it's not going anyplace. What we're getting ready for is the resumption of human space flights from the Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. The last space shuttle flight was July 2011. My pleasure to cover the second half of the shuttle program, and that last flight was really, I think about that a lot, and there are reminders all over my home office about that flight. Boeing and SpaceX Corporation are both building spacecraft that will fly to the International Space Station, low Earth orbit, and other missions too for private companies who want things in space or astronauts in space for whatever reason. They were originally all supposed to fly 3 years ago. Well, that didn't happen. The money wasn't there. There were technical delays. And you know what? These things take time. But now it's looking like Boeing and SpaceX will be test flying their spacecraft. For SpaceX, it's the Dragon, human-rated Dragon. I want to say it's the Boeing Starliner. I mean, I should know this, and my mind has been at about 100 different places. But Boeing is hoping to fly theirs as well in a test configuration, unmanned first, and then manned orbital tests within the next few months. I mean, that's going to be exciting. SpaceX owns Pad 39A now, or leases it from NASA and the Kennedy Space Center. It's been modified specifically for their Falcon 9 rockets, and there have been a number of launches from there, unmanned, over the past 18 months or so. Boeing is going to fly their spacecraft on top of an Atlas V rocket, and the Atlas V's launch from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, right across the river from KSC proper. And that's where the first human launches came from for the U.S. Mercury, Gemini, and the very first Apollo launch. So
I'm taking that historic tour out there. That's
exactly. There's history there.
So I was down here for the next to last space shuttle launch, and I was over in Titusville watching along the water and a huge crowd of people. And it's amazing from a distance when you're right up close to it. What do you get to see that we don't?
Well, first of all, feeling of being 3.5 miles away from the launch pad, you don't just see it, you don't just hear it, but you feel it thumping in your chest. And my first space shuttle launches were outdoors because I wasn't doing live radio. When I'm doing live radio for CBS, it's inside our bureau, so I've got double paned glass, but the whole damn building shakes, and you hear it and you feel it, and it's just, I mean, I'll never forget my first space shuttle launch as a spectator back in 1989. And can I tell you something? Dozens of launches later, it never gets old.
That's neat to still have that thrill.
You got to have a lot of little kid in you.
Yeah.
But you also have to have a fair amount of adulthood and skepticism when they tell you stuff that turns out to be, well, not quite. And that's the challenge of covering space. You really have to ask the questions because in a lot of cases, especially now with SpaceX, they don't volunteer anything. But, you know, it's part of the charm and part of the challenge of doing it.
Absolutely. So let's close this out here by going back to Ithaca. And I'm assuming when you're down there for this anniversary, you'll be talking to students who are studying this now. What do you tell them about our business?
Well, you know, it's changed a lot. Technology has changed. The needs have changed. But, you know, the very basics are there. People are going to listen to us to be entertained, to be informed. They're going to come to us when everything else fails, when TV goes off the air and the internet goes down. Radio will still always be there. One of the things that I've always loved about radio is its immediacy. And the equipment that you and I are using today is the same equipment that I use to go gather news. And I love that all I need basically is a recorder that has a mic built in. I don't even need the mic that you're holding. Yeah. You can use the built-in mic, plug it into my laptop, and email a sound file back to my newsroom, and it gets on the air. But you know what? I can also record a sound file in my iPhone and send it back by email, which you couldn't do when I first started. I mean, think of the evolution that we've had. And I'm not going to be one of those guys who say, well, back in the good old days, because I think change is really good. A lot of the changes that have happened in our business, not so much. I hate the idea the radio newsrooms have shrunk so much. But it also means that as a program supplier, people are depending on us for material more than they ever have, programmers at individual stations around the country. And we have to be better than we've ever been before because of all the craziness that's going on in Washington and the rest of the world. So, you know what? The bottom line is, if you're in journalism, and I don't care if you're in radio journalism or anything else, the mission still remains the same. Tell me a story. Make it clear. If it's not clear and you don't understand it, how will your listener and reader understand it? Make it clear. Make it concise. Report it as quickly as you can if you're sure that you have it right. If you don't have it right, speed doesn't mean anything. And everybody will remember the one that you get wrong. So, you know, get it right. Get it first if you can. Get it fast as you can. But get it right first. As far as the rest of it, I mean, look, I hope people are still going to listen to radio as an entertainment medium. More people still get their music from radio than anything else, but, you know, there's a lot more to compete with. The streaming services, and with SiriusXM now buying Pandora, you know, that says to me that, you know, maybe satellite radio isn't the be-all, end-all for them, and that's, I think, a lot of people in the industry are saying that. But we're competing against SiriusXM satellite radio. We're competing against streaming services. We're competing against downloads. We're competing against other entertainment on the internet. We're competing against people who still have iPods. I still have my iPod, and I love it, and I swear by it.
But at the same time, you are a download, too. I can get the CBS Hourly on my phone anytime I want as a podcast.
And that's important, because people want stuff when they want it. No longer can you say, you can have this when we say you can have it. You can get the World News Roundup on download a half hour after it's been on the air, sometimes quicker. There's a whole lot of other stuff that you can get on download quickly, too. And we're in that business. Our competitors are in that business. And that's just going to keep expanding because that's what people want. You know, the CBS app that you can get for your smartphone is a wonderful resource for news. But there's entertainment on there, too. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of things on there.
Technology,
we have a live
segment.
Exactly. Technology segments, Jill Schlesinger on money, a whole slew of things that you can find on there. So, you know, I've always said we're always going to be providing content. The delivery method may change, and it's changing every day. Be prepared for change.
There you go. Peter King, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us.
Can't believe anybody actually wants to hear anything I have to say, but thanks for adding to the delusion.
So that was just one of the many conversations that we are having around the show floor, and we are keeping you in the loop, even if it's from a distance. So stay tuned to the Top of the Tower podcast. We'll have a lot more voices from the show floor coming up in the weeks and months to come. A reminder, this podcast is brought to you by your friends at Wheatstone, your source for anything and everything studio-related: mixers, consoles, IP networking, mic processing, even furniture. Plus, Wheatstone makes audio processing and the popular Jockbox, the Vox Pro digital audio editor. The Wheat team is here in Orlando, booth 44, so stop in and say hi if you are checking out this podcast on Wednesday night or Thursday and you are here in Orlando. And by the way, if you are here in Orlando, you can find me and get one of the very first copies of the brand new 2019 Tower Site Calendar. It is available now at fibush.com. And lots of great pictures in there. We think you'll enjoy it, and you can get one in person from me right here in Orlando, or place an order, and we'll be shipping those starting at the beginning of October. Our pre-issue discounts end in just a few short days, so get in on that right now. From Orlando, I'm Scott Fibush. It's the Top of the Tower podcast. We will be back with you from home base in upstate New York next week. Thanks for listening.